And I trust that our hearts have been focused upon heaven and focused upon the God that we have come to worship. And we thank you for being here. If you're our guest, we want you to know that we're very honored to have you today. It was in February of 1988 that this church had its beginning. And it was my privilege to be able to move to San Marcos in June of 1989 to begin working as a local evangelist with this church. And it's been my pleasure to be able to have what I consider to be one of the most wonderful families on the face of the earth, to be associated with the brethren here. I'd like to commend to you four gentlemen that serve as elders of this local church. First of all, Brother Brian Beck, the gentleman on my right over here in the glasses, sitting next to the lady in the gold dress. Brother Tom Meadows, who is right here on this third pew. Brother Paul Good, who is currently in the Seton Hospital and recovering from open heart surgery. And then myself. We also have five gentlemen that serve as deacons of this church. And if you have any questions about anything that we may say or practice, we certainly would welcome those questions. Our goal has been since the very beginning to recognize and honor the Bible as the Word of God, and to recognize that the New Testament provides a pattern for us to follow both in our individual lives as well as in the things that we do collectively. And we certainly hope that we continue to honor and glorify God. And if you would like to know more about us, we'd certainly welcome any questions that you may have about this local church, or more importantly, about the Lord. Back in 1923, nine of the most powerful men in the financial world met at the Edgewater Motel in Chicago. Among them were President of the New York Stock Exchange, a member of the President's Cabinet. The most well-known among those men was a fellow by the name of Charles Schwab. Ever heard of him? And yet, oddly, 25 years later, things had changed in the lives of every one of those men. Charles Schwab, by the way, died bankrupt. Three of them committed suicide, and one of them was just being released from the well-known Sing Sing prison. Money will not make you happy. And those nine men illustrate that fact. And we know that. And yet we live in a very material world. And the reality is that even the people of God are challenged by the challenges of wealth and material prosperity. So what is the answer to our dilemma? Well, it is certainly not to remove ourselves from our culture. I would suggest to you that the answer is to learn the joy of giving. The Apostle Paul commends the Macedonians in 2 Corinthians, the 8th chapter. He says, "Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality." I want to talk about that text for a while today, but before we do that, I want you to go with me to some Old Testament passages and look at some of the things that God even said to Israel with regard to giving. First of all, in the book of Numbers, the 18th chapter, and I may not read all of these, but in Numbers chapter 18 and beginning with verse 21, notice what God said to the children of Israel. He says, "Behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tithes in Israel as an inheritance in return for the work which they performed, the work of the tabernacle of meeting. Hereafter the children of Israel shall not come near the tabernacle of meeting, lest they bear sin and die. But the Levites shall perform the work of the tabernacle of meeting, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, that among the children of Israel they shall have no inheritance. For the tithes of the children of Israel which they offer up as a heave offering to the Lord, I have given the Levites as an inheritance. Therefore, I said to them, among the children of Israel, they shall have no inheritance." Thus God commanded the children of Israel that they were to give a tenth of all they had, their possessions, as a means of providing for the Levites who served at the temple who served as priest for the people of God. This tithe was not optional. It was mandatory. And it was given primarily for the purpose of supporting those men who attended and ministered at the tabernacle or ministered at the temple. I might just add as a side note, probably get in trouble, but I'll add it anyway, that if you take the census from Numbers 1 and then the census of the Levite from Numbers chapter 3 and you do a little math, you will find that those priests made 2.5 times more than the average Israelite. Now you might ask, why am I mentioning that? Because in the book of 1 Corinthians 9, the Apostle Paul uses that as an example for the support of preachers. But we also find not only did they have this temple tax, but we also notice that there was a festival tithe. In Deuteronomy, the 12th chapter, Moses was preparing them to go in to possess the land of promise. And they were then to have after that a feast, a festival, that was to remind them of what God had accomplished and what God had done for them in taking the land of promise. Thus, not only were they to give a tithe, but in addition to that, there was another 10% that was added on. Not only a mandatory 10%, but now a mandatory 20% that God required of the children of Israel. Interesting, isn't it? To celebrate their possession of the land of promise. But in the book of Deuteronomy, the 14th chapter, you find not only was there the festival tithe, but in Deuteronomy chapter 14, there was a poor tithe. In Deuteronomy chapter 14, in verses 28 and 29, Deuteronomy 14, 28 and 29, at the end of every third year you shall bring out the tithe of your produce of that year and store it up within your gates. And the Levite, because he has no portion nor inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates may come and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work which all the work of your hand which you do. So every 3 years, in addition to the 20%, there was another tithe taken. Do the simple math, and that means 23% annually was given. And it was not something done willingly, but it was mandatory. It was demanded of all the Israelites that they give this tithe for the encouragement and help of those who could not help themselves. Thus, they funded the priest. They had a national feast, and there was even a feast or even a tithe that was taken every 3 years for the benefit of the poor. It's interesting also in Leviticus, the 19th chapter, that in addition to that, in Leviticus chapter 19, we find an interesting law that is given beginning in verse 9, Leviticus 19 and verse 9, that when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest, nor shall you, and you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor, for the stranger. I am the Lord your God. Even when they would begin to harvest the field, they were to leave a portion of it for the benefit of those who were poor. And finally, in Nehemiah, in the book of Nehemiah, the 10th chapter, and verse 32. In the time of Nehemiah, there was added even a temple tax. Also, we made ordinances for ourselves to exact from ourselves yearly 1/3 of a shekel for the service of the house of our God, for the showbread, for the regular grain offering, and for the burnt offering of the Sabbath, the new moons, and the set feast, for the holy things, for the sin offerings to make atonement for Israel, and for all the work of the house of our God. So in addition, even to the regular tax, there was even a temple tax. Thus, the total would be a mandatory 25% in Israel. But that's not all. We also find that there were occasions when they gave willingly or out of grace. You remember in the book of Exodus, the 25th chapter, Moses was gathering materials for the purpose of building the tabernacle. And in the 25th chapter of the book of Exodus, verses 1 and 2, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, "Speak to the children of Israel that they bring me an offering from everyone who gives it willingly with his heart. You shall make my offering. And this is the offering which you shall take from them, gold, silver, and bronze," and so forth and so on. And then in the 36th chapter of Exodus, Exodus chapter 36 and beginning with the second verse, Exodus 36 and beginning with verse 2, "Then Moses called Beelzebul, Aholiab, every gifted artisan whose heart the Lord had put wisdom, everyone whose heart was stirred to come and do the work. And they received from Moses all the offering which the children of Israel had brought for the work of the service of making the sanctuary. And so they continued bringing him freewill offerings every morning. And then all the craftsmen who were doing all the work of the sanctuary came from each from the work he was doing. And they spoke to Moses saying, 'The people bring much more than enough for the service of the work which the Lord commanded us to do.' And Moses gave commandment, and they caused it to be proclaimed throughout the camp, saying, 'Let neither man nor woman do any more work for the offering of the sanctuary.' And the people were restrained from bringing, for the material which they had was sufficient for all the work which had to be done. Indeed, it was too much." What a great scene. The people were excited, and freely and willingly they gave out a heart of gratitude. And finally Moses said, "We have enough. You don't need to bring it. We have enough. It is sufficient." Let me ask the question, why did I go through all that? Well, taking a word from Isla Meadows. She used to say, "You know, if the Lord required 10% of Israel, then I wonder what He requires of us. Would He not require more?" I thought a lot about that. But consider with me the example, of course, that we have in the New Testament. Go with me to the book of 2 Corinthians, the 8th chapter. And first of all, we go back to the example that the Apostle Paul gave in 2 Corinthians 8. He was encouraging the brethren to participate in a contribution that was for poor saints in Jerusalem. And he's encouraging the brethren at Corinth, and he uses the Macedonians as an example. And he says, "Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality." In that context, in the first 9 verses, the Apostle Paul uses the word grace. The idea is, I guess simply put, privilege, honor, the privilege of giving. And he uses the Macedonians as an example. He says they give in a great trial of affliction, and they give out of deep poverty. The Greek word for deep is the Greek word that from which we get our word bathysphere. Ever heard that word? Jacques Cousteau, ever watched that? That probe they put in the depth of the sea? The idea is that when the Macedonians gave, they gave out of deep poverty. I mean, what Paul says is they were truly poor. And not only that, did they give out of deep poverty, but furthermore, they gave in much affliction. They were truly poor, and they were truly afflicted. That is, it was a time of persecution. Now, you know, we think we're poor when we can't go out to eat on Friday night. And isn't it true that the American way is that we spend the money that we don't have to purchase the things that we don't need so that we can impress the people that we don't even like? And yet these people, the Macedonians, gave out of the depths of poverty because they were concerned about God and concerned about the need of the brethren in Jerusalem. And it was a privilege. The Apostle Paul tells us it was a privilege. He says, I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift and the fellowship of ministering to the saints. It wasn't that Paul said, you know, you churches of Macedonia really need to give. No, it was the contrary. It was they were saying, Paul, please let us participate. Let us be a part of this. They were freely willing, imploring with urgency that we would receive the gift. They were wanting to be a part of this. And they were imploring Paul, saying, let us be a part so that we can help the brethren in Jerusalem. Don't limit us. The grace of giving has nothing to do with how much you make. It has to do with attitude. It has to do with privilege and opportunity. And furthermore, not only that, but the focus of this giving is mentioned by Paul in the fifth verse. He says, and not only as we had hoped, but first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. Why was it that the Macedonians were so willing to participate? Simple. Because first of all, they had given themselves to God. If everything belongs to God, then the natural reflex is for us to want to give more to Him. And not only that, but the example of the Macedonians had tremendous impact, or at least Paul hoped it would. Because in verses 6 and 7, he says, we urge Titus that as he had begun, so he would also complete this grace in you as well. But as you abound in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all diligence, and in your love for us, see that you abound in this grace also. It has been a privilege of the Macedonian to participate in this contribution. And Paul says, don't you know at Corinth you have been richly blessed? Yeah, they had a lot of problem, but they were a truly gifted church. He says, you abound in faith and in speech and in knowledge and in diligence. Now, Paul says, I also want you to participate in this grace. I want you to follow the example of the Macedonians, that you also might participate in sending aid to the saints at Jerusalem. And the fact is, folks, that we may worship Him regularly, we may pray every day, we may read our Bibles every day, but we have never, ever really learned the discipline of giving. The reality is that if God really has your heart, God also really has everything else that we have. All given to Him. Everything really belongs to Him. So Paul says, follow their influence and follow their example, and you also learn to give as they gave. You know, it's interesting that in the New Testament that Jesus says more about the insecurity of money than almost any other topic, including hell and sexual immorality. Read the Gospels. And what does He say? It's hard for a rich man to go to heaven. In fact, He says it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to go to heaven. He says, don't lay up earthly treasures. Matthew, the 6th chapter, in verses 19 and 20. He says, lay up treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust corrupt and thieves do not break through and steal. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24, he says, you cannot serve God and mammon. And in Luke, the 12th chapter, he says, beware of covetousness. Why? For a man's life does not consist in what? in the abundance of the thing which he possesses. The point that Jesus makes here is there's more to life, folks, than things. Relationships, family, church, and relationship with God are more important than things. Finally, Paul in 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 9 gives us the ultimate example of giving. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that you through his poverty might be rich. You know what impresses me about that text? Nothing gimmicky about it at all. Paul is not some highfalutin televangelist on the TV saying, send your money and I'll heal you. He's not some highfalutin evangelist trying to build some kind of fancy edifice or fancy building. He says, here's your example. God gave his son. Jesus, the one who could touch, yes, was even responsible for the creation of all the stars of heaven. The one who enjoyed all the glory and majesty of heaven, all the greatness of being God. He became poor. Why? For George and David and Adam and Randall and Brian and Griffin and Christy and Nancy and all the rest of us. That you, through his poverty, might become rich. Consider with me very quickly some principles about giving. Number one, giving is not a meritorious work. If you give so that you can impress someone else or so that you can impress God, then you're doing it for the wrong reason. Number two, giving will be blessed by God. In fact, the Apostle Paul very plainly says in 2 Corinthians chapter 9 that if you sow sparingly, you'll reap sparingly. If you sow bountifully, you'll reap bountifully. What does that mean? Does that mean that if I go give a lot, that God is going to put a Cadillac in my front yard? No. What it means is that you will be blessed spiritually. But let me ask you a question. Which would you rather have? Now be honest. A spiritual blessing or a padded bank account? Which would you rather have? The joy of the Lord or a yacht? Which would you rather have? God will bless your giving. Giving that pleases God is sacrificial. That's what we find in the example of Jesus. The kind of giving that truly pleases God is giving until it hurts. Though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that you through his poverty might be rich. Giving is between you and God. It's not my business or your business. That's between you and God. But let me suggest something. That you pray about that and you take it seriously. Giving must be regular. 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by in stores. God has prospered them that there be no gatherings when I come. And finally, our giving must be joyful. For God loves a cheerful giver. God gave his son as the example. I think the principle of 2 Corinthians is you give till it hurts. Why? Because God gave when it hurt. For who? for pitiful, hell-bound sinners like you and me, that we might receive the grace and honor of being His children, of serving Him, of having the hope of heaven. God died for you and me. Jesus died on the cross. If you believe that, but you have never come to Him on His terms, if we can help you today, if today you would like to be baptized into Christ for the remission of sin, we certainly would welcome that opportunity. We invite you to come as we stand and sing the song selected.